Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to another City Alpha 3. I'm Philip Gilfus, and I'm joined, as always, by my fellow Alphans, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. How are you guys doing?
Alphanians.
I mean, I'm kind of more, I'm more beta than Alphan, but it's like right on the line. Like, there's that line that goes right down the middle of the planet. I don't know why they decided to make the map like that, but...
Earth Civil War, Alpha versus Beta. Where's that quiz? Are you, which quadrant are you?
Well, that's the thing. Like, half of the solar system is in one quadrant. They draw it right through, which, anyway.
I haven't picked up my copy of Entertainment Weekly yet. I will probably have picked it up by the time listeners hear this podcast. It's the new Discovery one with the Discovery cover.
There's a couple different covers.
Yeah, three different covers. And so, I mean, EW seems to, because that's what the cool kids call it. EW has been the premier to me in reporting on Discovery. They've been reporting for like maybe like 5 or 6 weeks now. I mean, so I've been waiting for the actual issue to come out. So I'm really interested to see the hard copy.
It was the same thing back with Rogue One. They were like the first ones to release full pictures of the cast or the characters that we didn't know before. So I was definitely picking up a copy, and it's the same thing with Discovery. They've just kind of cemented themselves as kind of that first look place. Kind of like, you know, the beginning of a movie theater. Nothing like that.
I don't know if it's related, because I didn't check to see the source, but I also noticed that this might have been from CBS directly, but there's a lot of videos going on that have been released with basically just interviews of the cast and stuff, talking about Star Trek and stuff. And so we're at the point where we've gone from is the show actually happening to, hey guys, there may actually be a show. And, we'll still see, but it looks like...
I'm just waiting for the person in the server room to accidentally push the button a day early and it releases on CBS All Access.
Let's be honest, that would be preferable to what might actually happen when everyone boots up All Access.
That's true.
And is like...
And it crashes because everybody's trying to watch the second episode. Yeah, that's a good point.
I would say I'm a hard copy person as far as magazines, but I'd read it on my tablet as well. But like, for instance, months ago, my mother-in-law, if she wasn't my mother-in-law at the time, but anyway, she bought a big old random box of Star Trek stuff at some like estate sale or something. So two of these items, I know the viewers can't see this, but one is Star Trek Voyager magazine.
Ooh, lithographic.
Yes. And then I have the Star Trek Deep Space Nine magazine.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah.
The season magazine. One Odo makeup.
Volume 3. Yeah. But it's interesting because I haven't actually gone through both of these yet, but I've kind of like leafed through the Voyager one because it's number one. So it has all the caretaker stuff and, talking about the beginning. So I think it's always interesting to sort of read the beginning of the series. And of course, looking back in time, it's sort of funny to see how things are framed or looked at. So it'll be interesting as we're here on the edge of Discovery, if you will, and seeing how that ends up. But
Trek FM's already taken that phrase, Philip. You're not allowed to use it. But no.
But any other other than Discovery, because obviously it's in the news, but any other Star Trekkian stuff going on in y'all's?
Well, are you not going to talk about tweeting with some of the actors, Philip? I mean,
we'll see. My wife,
new liaison of,
because she's every time I run to her and be like, "Look, Anthony Rapp liked a tweet of mine." She's like, "All right, get over it." But
I
yes.
would do it too.
No, I've Anthony Rapp, for those who don't know, and I'm sure you do. I don't know his character's name yet. Lieutenant something. He's one of the science officers. He's obviously going to be in Star Trek Discovery, of course, very famous for other reasons, being in Rent, both in the original Rent cast and both in the Rent movie as well, playing the same character. But he is very, very, very engaged on Twitter with fans. and even some of the negative fans, which is, you know, I would ignore them personally, but he doesn't. And it's interesting because when he engages with negative fans, he keeps it in a positive note, not like a rah rah positive, but a sort of
like
engaging.
We can always play the card of you haven't seen the show yet.
yeah, and you know, he's sort of like, well, you know, wait and see. But so I think Anthony Rapp is just, I've never seen a Star Trek star that engaged. I'm sure there are, huh? Engaged.
No,
but it's also, this is of course the first Star Trek series to start in the age of Twitter. So,
yes.
You know, but it'll be interesting. I mean, maybe we'll need to tweet at Anthony to be like, hey, you should come on a podcast maybe. And
he'll be like, you have to talk to my agent. And then it just all goes downhill from there.
Yeah. Then don't get blocked. But any other Star Trek stuff that's not Discovery related for y'all?
Nope. Not this
Nothing.
Week.
Y'all are just terrible fans. Well, that's all right, because we're here to talk about other non-Discovery Star Trek stuff. This idea came to me because I'm still doing my Enterprise rewatch in season two. And the idea came to me that, you know, First Contact, we're always told in the movie and even in Enterprise and other times, that, the you know, when humans first contact with the Vulcans and the 21st century, you know, several hours from now, that
2063 sort of, to be exact.
Yeah. Yeah. So it changed the world April 6th. Right. It's off the top of my head, so I might be wrong, but anyway, early April. And that sort of changed the way, you know, because once mankind realized they weren't alone, it, you know, it blew up our paradigms of the life and the world and how to live, and things went from there. But of course we know that is nowhere near the actual first contact that aliens had with humans. And so I wanted to talk about all the times we know that pre-21st century that aliens in Star Trek made contact with humans on Earth. And so I do have it in order here, but you guys, if you really just want to throw one out, you're more than welcome to. But I tried to do this sort of in your Earth time of kind of the earliest one. And so this is the earliest one I came up with. So if you guys, other than, you know, Q and Picard, Q standing on the formation of the life on Earth. The Chase, the TNG episode, season 6, episode 20. Now, not that we see it in the episode, but it certainly references the Preservers. Actually, they're not named the Preservers. We just make that up because I don't know if they actually are named. But basically, and in Darren, I know this is one of your favorite episodes, so I'll let you talk about it here. But the premise is, at the end of it, we're told that this mysterious alien race spread their DNA through early life and may have been responsible for the humanoid form. So maybe they were there at the beginning of Earth, you know, right when Q and Picard left after all good things, they showed up and sprinkled some stuff. But Darren, because I know this is one of yours, what do you think of this actual maybe first contact?
Yeah, see, now I'm picturing, like, in the background of that scene where Q and Picard are over that pile of goo, and there's one of the Preservers in the background, like, like he got caught, and he's, like, sneaking off behind some rocks. But, yeah, this is the one with, you know, Picard's old archaeology chum who's been searching for...
Galen.
Yeah, Galen.
Professor Galen.
Which, you know, sometimes Galens build Death Stars, sometimes they search for the origin of life in the galaxy. You know, it's a very scientific name, apparently. But, you know, he finds an actual intact, we won't care about it later, you know, pottery person with all the little, you know, sub-people inside. Anyway, but it's basically, yeah, it's Star Trek's explanation to why does everyone look human with different foreheads? And it's, yeah, it's, guess it's one of those things in sci-fi where you either acknowledge it and explain it or you just ignore it, and they chose to acknowledge it. But, yeah, but this is a fun episode because it's a mystery and they're, you know, to have to work together with the other races to put together the program that will, you know, because apparently they know there'll be tricorder and holographic technology eons, right? Who knows? It's a very long game they're playing. But basically, yeah, they seed the life, you know, throughout the galaxy, which is why everyone, you know, has two arms and two legs and walks upright and can shake your hand with 10 fingers and 10 toes. But yeah, so it's, yeah, this is definitely as far back as I can think that Star Trek goes beyond, you know, when Q's going back to the primordial ooze. But But yeah, it's a fun episode. It's definitely, you know, season six, you know, you're getting towards the end of the run, and it's a good Picard episode, and right up there with my favorites with like Gambit and some of the other ones, we get that focus on Picard.
Yeah, now I know this is cheating. Technically, it's really not our first contact.
Yeah.
Human life. But nevertheless, alien visitation, I will say.
Alien
but...
visiting Earth before 2063. That's what I heard.
I was going to bring up that point because we weren't around. So there is no contact being made here. Even if there was life, which I guess I can't remember specifically what they say in the episode, whether or not there was life already. But they directed it, so
they're like they're engineers.
It definitely wasn't human.
Alien.
All right, life. Now show me happy. Yeah, that's not happy. All right.
Also, Darren, not every alien species keeps their genitals in the same place. So maybe.
Well, to be technical, Daniel, he only mentioned arms and legs,
and
that's all he kept it to.
You said 10 fingers, and we know off the top of my head, the first thing I thought of was the Traveler, who has only 3 fingers. So you're still being very human centric here, Darren. But
the Tellarites, they have hooves.
Oh, the Tellarites do have hooves.
Well,
that's right.
Depending on which iteration you're watching,
that's true.
Well, one of the new aliens in Discovery has hooves. Their science officer has hooves.
Oh, yeah. And he has a little, like, how he walks on.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
We keep going by Discovery, which is fine. But yeah, Doug Jones, because I didn't watch the video. I just saw a little bit of the mention of the video. But apparently, like, he walks. I don't know if he walks on his tips.
Yeah.
His toes.
It's like on the ball of his feet forward.
Yeah, like that. So it makes him, like,
he's already really tall.
Yeah, so he's probably going to be, like, 6'8", the way he's probably.
He's approaching Mr. Hom territory right there.
Oh, yeah. Man. That is tall.
Yeah. So.
He had 10 fingers. I'm trying to think of creatures that didn't have 10 fingers.
Wow. That's your episode, Daniel. but what do you think about that, Daniel? I mean, you know, it brings to mind the Klingons and Enterprise, like, did we really need that explained? So this is sort of the humanoid form. Did we really need that explained? But what do you think of the origin of life on Earth being manipulated and not being necessarily 100% natural?
It just changes the goalpost for that explanation, because then how come the original preservers evolved that way too? It doesn't really matter. It's kind of a pointless explanation. It's kind of a cool sci-fi idea, but it doesn't really answer any questions in any creative way. I don't know.
We're all the same, Daniel. That Romulan, that Cardassian, you two, or you three, because I just said three of them, have more in common than you're different.
Also, yeah, it's tough because knowing what we know in Star Trek, they would definitely know that we were some, and at least on some level, genetically related to each other. But that's never brought up or anything. At least I guess maybe it does kind of explain like the crossbreeding stuff and blood transfusions between Klingons and Romulans and stuff like that. So I guess it does fit the Star Trek universe. It doesn't really bother me that much, but it's never, and it's such an ancient thing that it's not referenced very often, obviously. But it's cool. It's all right. I don't have a problem with it.
Sure. Okay. Well, all right. So the next one, and again, this is my rough Earth timeline, concerns Tattoo. And this is the Voyager episode. I know you wouldn't have guessed that if I didn't tell you it was in Voyager, because what series do you think of when you think of Tattoo? You have season 2, 9th episode. And this is where it's put forth that the Sky Spirits, you know, if you will, were these aliens who visited the Western Hemisphere of Earth about 45,000 years ago. Though I guess that's 45,000 years ago from the 24th century, but, you know, you get the message. And that they encountered this nomadic people. And I'm sorry, I read the Memory Alpha summary. I didn't watch the episode again. I'm sorry. So I cheated. But anyway, they took these people sort of... not all the specifics of what they did with them, but anyway, sort of persuaded them to move south, you know, away from, because you sort of see them in, well, no, like you see them in Chakotay's Vision, you sort of have them, you know, this, I don't know whether it's the Ice Age or they're just up there in, you know, Canada and Alaska, but, you know, you just see the wind and they're sort of frostbitten, but then they, when they meet the aliens, and then sort of the story goes, and they, you know, they move south in, into North and then South America, you know, sort of becoming the native population there. And then sort of, you know, the respect for the land that these aliens recognize with these people and et cetera, et cetera. And so that was sort of what tattoo that these aliens, first contact, literal first contact was then with sort of the, early humans. So Daniel, what do you think of magic aliens and Native Americans?
Not a lot. Not great. I don't think this is fantastic. First of all, let's kind of address the fact of what happened to these people, supposedly after these intelligent aliens told them to migrate a few thousand years later. And I don't know that they did them any favors. So, but that's neither here. This just seems so silly. I don't know. I don't know anybody that loves this episode. So I don't think I'm going to be stepping on any toes here, but it's just dumb. What's the point? I don't like it. I think it's silly. And there's no reason for this episode. It doesn't tell us anything about Chakotay, really. It doesn't tell us anything about this race or why they did this, why they interfered. I just don't like it. I think it's stupid. I wish it didn't happen, and I don't think about it.
The episode, the portions that I like, or at least that have potential, you know, because a lot of it is, for those who don't remember the episode, a lot of it is basically told through flashbacks of when Chakotay was younger and he didn't, you know, wasn't embracing the traditions of his people, but his father, you know, was you know, very much a traditionalist and trying to explain things to this, you know, moody teenage Chakotay. And so it sort of was interesting how his father was trying to you know, have his son come in the more traditional ways, and the son was rejecting it, and sort of their trip through the rainforest and all that. So, I mean, that was interesting to sort of see that father-son dynamic, and that Chakotay wasn't always this, you know, traditionalist that we see, that he was, you know, trying to just be embracing, you know, Starfleet and all that. But I don't know, Darren, what do you think of sort of the magical aliens ending, though?
Yeah, it's, again, it's a kind
in
of
in the Delta Quadrant, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's very revisionist and like, oh, we're going to change this part. And I don't know. Again, it's been a long time since I've watched this episode because it's just not really high on my repeat list. But, you know, we see this a lot in actually for being so far away. They actually interact with old timey Earth, like 37s. And, you know, like there's a couple of times where they, like the dinosaur evolvers and
oh god, it's
just, yeah, I'm not saying any of these are good episodes. I'm just saying they like sticking their nose in like old Earth, even though they're in the Delta Quadrant, which doesn't make any sense.
Dinosaur episode's also a Chakotay episode. I want to point that out.
Okay, all the Chakotay episodes are bad. I'm just gonna just draw the line in the sand right there. So yeah, that's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, no, I think, and by the end of this episode, maybe we'll agree, but I think in and of itself, maybe, but I just think by Voyager, they had done Aliens Visit Ancient Earth so much. I'm like,
yeah.
Was there one in every people? Like, everyone had their alien sponsor. Like, was nothing there natural?
Is nothing sacred to you?
It's the very reason that the guy, you know, the alien meme guy, aliens,
yes,
exists, yeah, is because how many times people seem to have visited Ancient Earth.
Well, then you got the Kazon guy who's like, humans.
Yeah. I don't want to say humans,
but it's humans.
But human.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think in an episode like this, I think it takes away, because, you know, and I don't pretend to be a Native American or original peoples expert, but it does seem to take away the power of that culture, which, of course, there's many cultures in that. It's not just one culture. But they have, like, oh, and they were alien influence. I'm like, you know, well,
we couldn't have built it on our own.
Yeah. And that the then I don't know, Daniel, you, and I'm not trying to start anything controversial here, but Daniel, it seems to me that often Star Trek will portray gods or gods or whatever you want to call it as just powerful aliens,
right?
So like in this episode, you know, Chakotay talked about the sky people that his, or sky spirits that his people, and turns out aliens.
I mean, it's fine, but it doesn't mean that every time that there is a god belief that it has to be an alien. It just seems silly. It seems silly to kind of do that kind of a thing. It's like,
but you are the Picard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but I was going to say we're going to stick with Native Americans or original people.
Unfortunately?
Well, I was going to say, just shows that it doesn't always be very original, but no, I never know the right term to use. Native Americans, is that like wrong original peoples? I don't know. Whatever term is supposed to be the right one. I apologize if I'm saying the wrong one. But anyway, this is going to be all the way back to the original series with the Paradise Syndrome. Season 3, Episode 3, where the Preservers are named by, you know, name checked. And this is sort of where, it's just like, and again, it's an interesting episode. I haven't watched it recently, though I enjoy it. You know, it's a middling to better TOS episode, in my opinion, but others may disagree and not like it for many reasons. But it's sort of casually mentioned, like, oh yeah, yeah, the Preservers just like grabbed some people every now and then and took them to another planet. So in the Paradise Syndrome, Kirk and company arrive on this other planet where they just, Native Americans just live there in this other planet, and so
yeah, I don't love this episode. I always remember it being really boring. I'd have to rewatch it again to see why I dislike it so much, but it's just,
well, you could argue that it, and this is going to betray my thoughts about Inner Light. I don't mean to say it this way, but it's sort of like Kirk's Inner Light.
Yeah, I could kind of see that.
I mean, he marries, I believe, and
I think so, yeah.
He doesn't, I guess, technically have a child. The woman gets pregnant, and then I believe everyone just dies, as I recall. So, which obviously is not, and I know you could argue there's a lot of stereotyping and maybe not good things about this episode, but yeah. I always think a quirky thing about the episode, and when I was reading Memory Alpha, it said the longest TOS episode. I would argue maybe one of the longest ever. But anyway, technically, like, the episode in and of itself is one of the longest episodes. Like, it's 3 months happened in that one episode. So
that's true. But yeah, there is some time dilation and stuff.
It's like the Enterprise is like on impulse power or something, following the asteroid that's going to crash into the planet or something like that. But Darren, you remember anything about this episode? And what do you think of the idea that the Preservers, if it is the same people, maybe it's not, you would argue, of taking, troubled cultures, or threatened cultures, that's a better word, from Earth and throwing them across the
yeah,
galaxy.
I mean, at least when we have that kind of similar in Next Gen, like, they purposely went there. They weren't taken there with the... this is not the first G, but this is another Wesley episode where he's going to make the right choice and not give the planet over the Cardassians or something like that. But yeah, but it's this one.
Journey's End.
Yeah, Journey's End. Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's, yeah, Preservers, I don't know. It's, again, I'm weakest as far as when it comes to TOS episodes, but I do remember this one. This is one, you know, it's very notable for, you know, the fact that he's wearing, you know, supposedly Native American garb, or at least what they thought was appropriate in the 1960s. But yeah, I really like what you guys said, though, about this is kind of Kirk's, you know, Inner Light. It basically, I mean, it's not quite programmed in the same way, but he does seem to actually get into the role, you know, even more so than Picard.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, we're verging away from the thing, but that's fine. But, like, James Kirk, without his love of Starfleet, who would he be? You know, sort of like the whole thing when you ask someone, like, you know, if you didn't do this job you do now, what job would you be doing? So it's like, if Jim Kirk wasn't Starship Captain, what would he be doing, you know? And I mean, not, like I said, I'm not going to say it's the best episode in the world, but it sort of posits that, you know, who is Jim Kirk if he, you know, wasn't a Starfleet officer? Maybe it's like a big, like, Marvel what if. What if Jim Kirk had never joined Starfleet?
Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't be captain.
That's true. I think that...
Maybe
that
he would sense. Be a horse racer or something.
Oh, yes. I had a list talked about. Anyway. But, yeah, yeah. So that's the Preservers, who apparently do not follow the Prime Directive. They're just grabbing, you know, pre-warp civilizations and throwing them around. They're all like Worf's brother, apparently. The next one in my entry is also a original series episode, and I always, like, I know the name of the episode, but I never say it out loud, because who mourns for
Adonis?
Apollo is what I want to call it, but it's not the name of the episode. It's who mourns for Adonis?
Yeah, Adonis, yeah.
I always want to say Adonis, too. I don't, who's Adonis, by the way? Like, I don't know, maybe I don't know my Greek. Like, I know who Apollo is, but who's Adonis, and what does he have to do with this episode?
He's his, like, brother. I'm sure he's your brother or cousin to any of those guys. Just this family tree is really not that big, so.
Right. Well, you know, they are all related, too. So, but anyway, for those who may not remember, this is the episode with Apollo, as I previously mentioned, where the Enterprise meets the Big Hand in space, and they're transported down, and long story short, they encounter Apollo, who, it's revealed, is the, I guess, or he purports to be the Apollo of ancient Greece, and turns out he was just
an alien. Ha ha.
Superpower,
gotcha.
Alien. I'm not saying aliens, but...
Yeah, but it was aliens.
Yeah.
And then we also will see this character later in Star Trek Continues.
Star Trek Continues.
They have Pilgrim of Eternity.
Yeah,
I mean, I know some people aren't as big fans of Star Trek Continues. I feel they... 9 times out of 10, they actually at least really present a good story that feels like it comes from this era of television. And I just watched their most recent episode 9, which has John DeLancey in it, What Ships Are For. And it was actually really good. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, their first episode was called Pilgrim of Eternity. And it actually featured the same actor who played Apollo in Who Mourns for Adonis. And yeah, they kind of try to reveal more that he has this kind of god organ, which helps him feed on the kind of, not psychic energy, but it's like the energy of admiration. So it's like the more he's praised and worshipped, the more powerful he's becomes. So, but yeah, it's kind of Stargate-y in the fact that it's like, oh, look, all our ancient Egyptian gods or our ancient Greek gods came from aliens, because couldn't have possibly built the pyramids by ourselves. How could we? But yeah, it's, I mean, but you've done a bit of a jump there, you know, Philip. We're probably in, you know, the ancient Greece. Like, that's not that long ago. We're getting pretty close to modern times.
Now, are you just saying that to me because I'm older? Or is that... well, you know, and again, Daniel, or either of you, but the story that Apollo, if that's his real name, purports to tell, you know, is that, okay, you know, well, he doesn't say this, but what Kirk at least says is that, okay, these aliens landed, oh, and there are these, you know, people who were like raising sheep, and they're like, hey, these are these super people, they must be gods. And but then, which, okay, you get that, right? You get that, that's fine, it's not a new story. But then this is what comes next, that the people stopped worshiping as they grew more advanced, and as you said, Darren, you know, with less worship, the gods, quote unquote, or this race of aliens decided to disappear, and I don't know, you know, go beyond the rim. I don't know, you know, sort of
take the ship into the west, and, you know, something like that.
So but it's sort of a bit of you know, god killing. I don't that might be a strong phrase, but you know, as I said, Daniel, this is certainly nothing new to Star Trek, at least nothing to the original series. So is there a deeper story they're trying to tell in this episode, or what do you think?
No, I think they probably had some old Greek columns and a toga lying around, and they probably wrote the story around that, because this is, it's so silly.
It is silly.
But TOS is silly a lot of the times. But even though I don't really think this episode's played silly, but it comes across as silly. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really care. What are they trying to do here? I agree with Darren that it kind of takes agency away from humans when they do this stuff. And I mean, you could tell a story, I guess, about the ancient Greek gods being real and aliens and stuff. And that might be interesting. This is not the way to do it. And it's, I don't know, it just seems so pointless. I don't get why they, it's a budget reason, I'm sure, but I don't really get why they did this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of already said on this one, just maybe not so much that it, like in Stargate, it's saying, oh, they couldn't have built the pyramids, or they couldn't have done this or that. But in this, it's not like they're saying, oh, they couldn't have built the Roman Colosseum. It's just saying, no, they were dumb and worshipped this alien instead of a made-up god. Like, that's what, I don't know, it's...
We'll imagine you said Greek pantheon instead.
That's what I meant, yes.
Well, you know, yeah, because of course the Romans stole the Greek gods, and so, you know, and rebranded. So
yeah, pretty much. They rebooted the franchise for the first time.
Exactly. did anyone really like Zeus and Jupiter? Really? Did we need another one? Yeah. Though there are some troubling aspects to this episode, because Apollo possibly assaults a crew member.
Yeah.
There was I was about to say an aborted storyline, and that might be too on the nose, that she was going to end up being pregnant at the end of the episode. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't go that way.
Yeah. But yeah, so again, yeah, I'm not saying aliens, but okay. So now we're going to jump to the 20th century. So y'all have to let me know if I'm missing anything. But the next one I have on my list is in 1947, in a little place I call Area 51, my friend.
Oh, geez.
And that's Little Green Men, Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode
8. Great episode. Best one so far of any of the ones you've listed.
Oh, by far. By far.
All right. Well, what do you think of this first contact with whatever, not the Vulcans, and not super powerful aliens, but the Ferengi trio, Darren?
Yeah, well, let's see. First, I got a knock on the side of my head, and then you'll replicate. No, this is a fun episode. It's Quark and Rom and Nog and Odo, and it's so funny. It's so well
done. I forgot
done.
Odo. Yeah, you're right. Odo. So four people, really.
Yeah, well, because he's, you know, the straight man.
The dog.
Yeah, he's the dog. He's not in it very much, but it works out, and it's so funny. They just but no, I like this because, okay, it's strange how this one doesn't feel like they're removing anything from history or downplaying like a significance of some sort of event, maybe just because it's already this kind of an event. But the way that they kind of just perfectly step into this chunk of history and go, oh yeah, that's what this was about. And it's not like the first time this hasn't been done in science fiction, but they step into the role of this is the Roswell aliens so well that you just run with it. And it's just a great single episode that just, you know, which fortunately they get home in time for dinner, like all good Star Trek. You gotta wrap it up at the end.
Well, now, I mean, the interesting thing about, you know, if we're in the Star Trek universe, and, you know, we know our own history, so if we have all these tales and beliefs of alien visitations on Earth, and believe the Star Trek universe is in our reality, you know, how do we marry that? Like, so are we saying that, like, that doesn't exist and it's just crazy people, or are we going to write Star Trek stories that explains alien visits on Earth, basically we're saying Area 51 in Roswell, Darren, like you said.
Right.
I think you could easily leave a little bit of room open to the idea that there was other things going on, and while also simultaneously dismissing vast majority of those tales, just like we do today anyways, because who knows? For all we know, something could have happened once or twice or however many times, but almost certainly, all of those tales are false. So it's just the same kind of thing. We could easily fit that in there.
Oh, so they got to you, Daniel.
Yeah. So and the thing is, like, it does stretch, canon a little. I would kind of explain it away by saying that the records were lost in World War III or whatever, I guess, and because they got out of there without leaving any evidence behind. So you could kind of...
Yeah, it's not like they left a phaser sitting on the counter. Dang it.
Oh, that's...
It always happens.
Or a communicator.
Yeah, or a communicator. Although...
But I love this episode. It's a lot of fun. And it just fits well. It just fits well. And like, they didn't take it seriously. They don't have like some Klingon crash in New Mexico, right, and then start a war or something like that. You know, they played it for fun, and it was just like Darren said, just like a one-off little adventure that they have. They get in there, they interact, they do the fish out of water stuff. And hey, we get to look at the how the translator works, and we get to hear Ferengi.
That's true.
So we, you know, it's good little stuff in there. It's fun. You can tell they had a blast writing it and making it, and it's so much fun to watch. So I absolutely love this episode.
Now, it's been a while since I've seen this episode, but Daniel, you're my cultural expert. So, you know, you could argue that when first contact happened between humans and Vulcans, you know, humans are, you know, were coming out of this time of post-World War III, you know, not exactly the best maybe, but they had realized they had done wrong and maybe a new era had started, so that, you know, maybe there was the right time, you know, for humans to meet Vulcans and all this stuff. But this is 20th century humans meeting Ferengi, and Quark's like, oh, this is pre-Federation humans. These people I can work with.
Yeah, they end up wanting to kill him, so he wouldn't have lasted that long.
It is pretty amazing how quickly Quark becomes manipulative and scheming, and it's very interesting. It's obviously fitting within not just Quark but Ferengi culture as well, that wow, I now have a whole new marketplace that I can exploit. So and that would be fun. It's actually kind of an interesting maybe what if story. Like, what if Quark had become some sort of amazing, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, they could have easily said...
Now I'm picturing that I'm walking through Washington, D.C., and I arrive on these big stairs.
The Lincoln Memorial.
And I look up, and it's a Ferengi head.
You monsters! Well, yeah, and it's, you could just as easily had them end up, like, in Machu Picchu and become, like, the sun god or something like that. But, no, and I also like how in this episode, because it's a time travel episode, but they set it up as a predestination paradox where it's so closed in the loop, they're basically, it's not like there were aliens and we overwrote that timeline. It's like, no, this always was what it was. You just didn't know it.
Right. Yep.
Which is fun. They do a good job with it.
It happened before, Darren. It will happen again. Well, a mere 10 years later, from 47 to 57, we have the Vulcans, and that's in Carbon Creek from the second Enterprise or second season of Enterprise, episode 2. I don't know. What do you guys think? When I was watching my Enterprise rewatch, I'm like, oh, this one. But I don't know. I think I'm in the minority. I think most people like it. But what do you all think of the Vulcans visiting the era of I Love Lucy?
I do like it. It's an interesting way to establish that maybe the Vulcans had more of an interest in Earth before. Like, they kind of knew what was going on and they kind of left us alone. Yeah, but I don't know how well that fits in. But I think it fits in fine. But I like the episode overall, and it's nice, and it just kind of links together people and Vulcans earlier on in the timeline, but I think that's okay. I think it's good. And I think this is a good way to do it. And obviously, because Vulcans are so similar visually to humans, all they have to do is always wear a hat or whatever, and they're fine.
Now, Daniel, I have trouble believing anything you just said, because I have one sentence for you. T'Pol plays her ancestor.
Oh yes,
that is true.
I do hate that. I didn't know that had to be said, but yes, absolutely. It is infuriating that she's in the episode. Of course, they're not going to not have her in the episode. But
I don't know. Maybe it is T'Pol, and she just looks really good for 500 something years or however.
Now you say that, Darren. This episode confused me when I first saw it, because I'm like, she sang her second grandmother's. I forget, but I'm like. But then at the end, she pulls out the purse. I'm like,
right, which I'm assuming is just like an heirloom handed down. But still, they it's muddy.
Like, what makes more sense, that it's an heirloom handed down, or that I'm not really saying it was her, but I'm like,
Yeah,
it makes more sense it was her than like some generations of Vulcan women passed down an Earth purse.
Well, because how many years is it? Because Enterprise takes place in
22?
100 years, maybe?
What? No way. More than that.
Or 200 years.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about 200 years, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, she's...
Yeah, okay, so it's not her.
Mid-22nd century.
Oh, 21, whatever. Okay, so it would be...
Maybe 150, but still.
Yeah, it's still
no.
Little...
T'Pol should not. We saw T'Pol's mom. She didn't look exactly like T'Pol. There's no reason her grandmother would look exactly like her. It's stupid.
Well, you know, not everyone can Brent Spiner it.
Ugh. But yeah, no. But this is a fun. It's a fun episode. It's a little interesting in the whole kind of story aspect where it's like it's back and then it's forward, then it's back, then it's forward. You know, it's kind of. But I guess you kind of have to do it like that. The only other way is to say, oh, a transporter accident, like, I'm in the past. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's...
I guess a interesting part about this episode, as compared to the other ones we've talked about, you know, all the ones we talk about involve, like, gods or historical events, but this is the, not to... I don't know if Carbon Creek's a real place, but not to make fun of it. It's a middle of nowhere. So, I mean, it's you know, that's where something could happen, because who would know? You know, it's small rural place or small
town.
I'm
sorry, Philip. Are you downplaying the importance of Velcro? Have you ever used it before? Because it's pretty handy.
Well, so. When I was, like, 8, it was on my shoes. That's about... But yeah, and so I mean, this can take place, and you don't have to like explain away. Though you know, it is interesting trip. You know, at the end of the story, it's kind of like, yeah, I kind of like you sort of have Captain Archer and Trip kind of poking holes. Like they listen to the story, they're kind of like sometimes like us after we watch a Star Trek episode, we'll be like, man, that was awesome. Wait a minute, yeah. And they're all like, what'd they do with the body? How did they, you know? And so
I wonder if. If these events did take place, which the episode seems to suggest that they did, but it definitely leaves it open for them to not be true. Mm. If the Vulcan government shared this information with the humans after first contact.
It's kind of like when, you know, as we've learned stuff from like the Silviets or something about what was going on, you know, when we were doing stuff on the other side.
Yeah.
Kind of opens up the history books.
Yeah,
after
I wonder.
Things have happened.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess my problem, quote unquote, is that this is maybe a problem I have with Vulcans and Enterprise. These Vulcans don't act very Vulcan-y.
Right.
You know, the
teachings of Serac and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
they do.
But this person at the, or these group of Vulcans are not the Enterprise era Vulcans. They're early Vulcans. And I don't know if that makes them better or worse as far as how more they are to follow the teachings. But like the third one, I get that, you know, he's going to be the oddball because he's in, you know, but he just acts a little too human. And I know this could be the debate we could have forever. How do you play a Vulcan? But I guess because you like, almost see him like flirting with the woman who runs the
bar. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look, every but, 7 years. Then, okay. That's all I'm saying.
And then you have sort of the T'Pol character, you know, selling
or
the Velcro.
Is
to get
it
the,
T'Pol?
The,
yeah.
To get the college money for the kid. And so you're like, okay, well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I know other people like it, but again, I another argument
it's the
is,
edge of being this... a tall tale. We could almost, like, discount it and just pretend she made it all up, which they kind of do
right.
At the end, but.
Or it could just be, there could be elements of a real story in there that doesn't look just like that.
True.
Well, see, the problem is when you tell a story down a couple generations kind of things.
But at this point, it's only 2 generations. It's really not that removed.
Hey, you know what episode you forgot, Philip?
What's that?
Which would have taken place 20 years earlier than this. Exactly. The
Go ahead.
The 37s.
Do they visit?
Okay.
I guess they do visit. They
well,
scoop
they
up.
Take, no, they take
you're,
people.
You're right. Well, you're right. You know, and that's fair. So, like, yeah, let's talk about this. That's 37s. I can probably do this off the top of my head because it's episode or season one, because it's the last episode, so I'm sure it's episode 22 or
no,
something.
No, it's the first episode of season two,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yep. You know why I'm confusing it?
Because
it was originally planned to be the season finale.
Well, there's what's planned and there's what's actual, Philip. There's
so you're right. So season two, episode one, Uno. Yeah, so the 37s. Yeah, and this is more aliens stealing people. And what was the do we remember the explanation? Was it just like for like?
I think it was just study. I don't think
slaves or study or do we know?
Didn't they kill them all?
No, they put them in stasis.
No. The other.
You're in a stasis cube.
What happened? Because those people weren't around, were they?
No, they weren't.
Oh, yeah, the alien captors.
The people had killed the alien captors and then made that city, right? The city that was right. So beautiful that we couldn't even see it.
And then they turned it into a Western town.
Yeah. And then
thinking of another one. Sorry. Alien.
I haven't seen this one in a while, but yeah,
you're right.
Humans had escaped, killed the captors, and then built the city.
Yeah, because the 37s were like frozen, but they were sort of like leftovers, whereas everyone else had, you know, generations,
right.
And then now,
right.
Yeah.
That seemed like a pretty, that you would think that would be a bigger deal than it was. I mean, I know they play it in the episode like, oh no, like, will people stay or will people go? But I mean, those are people. Like, those are humans. It's a couple of hundreds of years. Like, that's not...
Right.
That's not really
a question. Do you really want to jump on this starship that's several hundred years past your technology, Amelia Earhart?
It's just interesting that, like, you would think that that would be one of the biggest things of the Delta Quadrant that, like, Starfleet would jump right on and be like, okay, we need to... I mean, you don't have to
Earth
rescue
two.
Them, but you have to, like, yeah. You could easily turn it into a colony because those are just people.
That's true.
Those are just people.
And they're humans.
Yeah.
Like, from Earth.
Yeah, yeah, people. Literally people with the same history up until 1937. And then things...
If you prick
Wait,
them,
which year was that
they
that they were up to? I can't quite recall.
It's literally an episode that entire premise is constructed to explain the disappearance of Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
It's to have a truck in space.
Oh, that's
cool. Oh, gosh.
Well, this is where we learn the very important fact that Tom is a 20th century expert of everything.
And Tuvok doesn't know what backfiring trucks sound like, so.
You know, it's always to me, Star Trek plays fast and loose between people that know what cars are. Like, you know, you have...
that's true.
I don't know, this is tangential, but... So you have that, you know, the 37s. You have... piece of the action in TOS when Kirk has to like, and also like how they know stuff I don't know now. Like, I couldn't drive a 1937.
No.
I don't know how to do
like,
a clutch.
Yeah,
I don't know,
like,
you know.
It totally changed. I was just thinking that, like, I've been in a Model T that a friend owned, and it's like, it is not simple at all. It's like balancing the knobs and the levers, and like, I could not just sit down and intuitively know how to drive it. So.
But you have a driver's license, Darren. You should know how to drive it. What the heck?
And then you have...
Look, this thing's got more clutch pedals than I have feet, so...
Oh, man, that's funny.
And then you have the... And I don't know the episode off the top of my head, but the season 4 Enterprise episode, where they go back to...
Oh, yeah. Chicago?
2000.
Detroit?
Whatever.
Chicago? Detroit?
Yeah, I don't know.
One of those.
But they go to
Nazi time?
Whatever year... No. Well, they go to the year that episode was made, 2000 and whatever, and that's where they have the reptilians, you know, poisoning the...
Wait a minute. Philip, are you saying the reptilians are real?
Well, of course they are. Didn't you see them?
What about the avians, huh? When are we going to break the silence?
They were probably around in 2000, whatever.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, and then I was going to mention past tense...
Because you have
in
Archer
Deep
in
Space
the car,
Nine.
And
oh,
Paul's
gosh.
Like, do you
yeah.
know how to pilot this?
That is true. The car.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I was going to mention past tense. Technically, past tense, Deep Space Nine, season 3, episode 11, Trill, for the first time in past Earth.
You must be referring to my tattoos.
Yeah.
Yes. We're stretching the definition for sure, but technically, it's an alien on Earth previous to 2063.
And then I think your forgetting that same episode where a Bajoran, much like a Quantum Leap
episode, she's just going everywhere
in Earth history.
My nose, throughout. I was in a fight. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
She gives a peace sign at one point.
Because, you know, let's not send Odo, the shapeshifter, who can change into...
He can't Kira do human like, faces.
Kira is like the Forrest Gump of Star Trek. Oh, she just shows up randomly in these historical photos, the 60s and the 20s and the... Yeah, you know. He's like the Doctor. But yeah, I mean,
they're playing fast and loose with beaming through time. Let's just put it that way.
Because yeah, I mean, we can play fast and loose with time travel stories that involve crew members who are not humans. You know, because we have, you know, City on the Edge of Forever. You have Spock walking around, you know, 1930s Earth and things like that.
So. That is true. Yeah, yeah, that's so true. But I know what you mean. You're talking about Visit, not like a Starfleet officer member. Because that doesn't count. Because otherwise, then you could technically say 1986 for, or 84.
Spock.
Yeah.
Well, Spock. I mean, we did see a man mind melding with whales. And so
did we, Philip? Did
in San
we?
San Francisco.
You could also include.
Look,
and I
they're
hesitate.
Not your whales.
you could also include, and I hesitate to say it, but. I'm forgetting the name of the episode now. Stupid Mark Twain episode.
Time's Arrow.
An
android.
You know, it's funny because I actually designated the second half of this episode solely to Time's
oh,
Arrow.
Oh, good. Well, I got to go.
No, well, I mean, are you talking about Guinan, though? Because you're talking about an Elorian.
Yep.
Right. And you have the, I don't even know the name of the aliens. Oh, but they're in, I should because they're in Star Trek Online. But anyway.
Oh, those aliens also count. Those weird.
That's true. That's true. That's
snaky,
even more so.
Basies.
It was like something three. The planet was something three, and that's what
SETI
they called them.
Elf-
no, not that. It's like Nimbus 3 or something.
No. But anyway, so yeah.
If
yeah,
only
yeah,
I was
that,
forced
that
not to watch this very often because of Daniel.
Yeah.
That's all
right. Oh, Lordy. Now I'm just thinking of everything Mark Twain ever said. And you know, Data is an alien. I feel like you can classify him as that.
I don't know. I don't know.
Is he human, Daniel?
No.
Is he human?
But that's like.
Oh wait, I'm
no,
sorry.
But
is Data
we've
actually going to be another episode?
Like Federation members.
He
and
was made
crew
by a human.
That
so
are not.
I don't. That's like saying, I wouldn't call him an alien. I don't know. I wouldn't call him an alien. I mean, I guess it's. By definition, but
so is he Terran?
Davidia 2. Davidia 2. I had to get it out.
I mean, like, are you like, is it like some sort of 14th Amendment thing where, like, since his dad was human, Data has Earth citizenship somehow?
I would think so, yeah.
He was built, we don't even, he's got the built in
like
America
saying, okay,
tag.
If
Soong doesn't, we're not even assuming he was ever born on Earth, he's just human generally,
right? But if so, okay,
so here's
are humans
the question
not born
is
on
he,
Earth.
Yeah, alien? If humans are not born on Earth,
a Martian?
Are they aliens?
You could be a
I
Martian.
Yes and no.
Or Moonites? Moonies?
Lunans.
Well, if we think the Federation, like the United States, then as long as you're born in that, then I guess you wouldn't be Terran.
Is Data an anchor baby? That is the question we're deciding now.
You wouldn't be Terran, but you would be human, and you would and you would be a citizen.
Okay,
so you would not be alien. So no,
human.
I don't
even
think,
the name is racist.
Wait. So
I don't.
So you would say android is human? Because I mean, if it's not human, it's alien.
No, that's not true. I don't think those are the same things. I think those are. I don't. I think that's a false dichotomy. You're setting.
That's
up
such that. A limited late 20th century view, Philip.
Yeah. I'm just saying, Daniel. There is strange new life. There it sits.
What if Soong made
waiting.
Data on Earth? Would you then call him an alien still?
Well, he didn't. We know where he made him.
Well, I'm asking, though, because that seems to be the problem. It seems to
be... he's alien to us.
It seems to be geographic with Philip, and I'm asking if it would...
Celestial, yeah.
Would that make him alien still?
Because
that would
the
make...
The fact that he's not human, it makes him alien.
Well, see how... there you go. That's your human-centric point of
view.
He
talks all about becoming human and wanting to be human. By self-definition, he's not human.
Well, no. I will... Because let's throw this in here. there are things on Earth that are not human, that are not aliens, like crocodiles are not humans. Teddy bears are not humans. Right. They're inanimate objects. But anyway, you know, so you don't have to be human to be...
But look, crocodiles are not a warp-capable species, so...
Well, right after the dinosaur episode, Darren,
oh, Lord.
There was actually...
Let's not talk about the dinosaur episode.
So if an alien is... Say Spock was born on Earth.
Okay, I like this. Okay, go ahead.
Let's not even...
Well, no. Spock is half alien.
That's what I was going to say. You can't be half alien. That's see, this is why we have to change our vocabulary.
Half human.
Okay. No. So what would you consider Spock then?
Okay, so I guess it depends.
There's a spectrum.
We need to define what we mean by alien. If we mean anything not from Earth, then it doesn't matter if you're human. Humanity has nothing to do with it. That would make... If Data was created on Earth, that would make him non-alien.
Well, I would think maybe that would be true, because, and I'm not a scientist by any means, but if you were born of humans, on another planet, there might be differences, like biological differences, just being raised in an alien world. I mean, there certainly has to be, you know, you can't just be Earth copies everywhere. I mean, immunology, bacteria, all that would be literally alien.
Well,
on you.
All of that would have been solved by technology. So almost...
like poverty and...
Yeah,
hunger.
Exactly.
Okay. So I don't know. I'm willing to posit for the moment that, yes, everything not of Earth is alien.
Well, that is a very, very human-centric viewpoint, Philip, and it's not becoming of a 24th century Starfleet officer. It would be actually interesting, though, because obviously we do think in these terms, and this is kind of a missed opportunity for Enterprise.
Well, no, because if you're from a colony, you know, colony Darren 4, and you have these Earthers show up, and you're like, hey,
freaking hate Earthers.
Your alien ways are not mine.
Right. It's relative. Know? Right. Absolutely. It's relative. Yeah. But when you have a society that's built of many, many, many different peoples from many, many different planets, and then they all start kind of coming together in different ways.
So you're saying Federation, every person in the Federation is the same in as much as this definition is. There are no aliens in the Federation. They are all of the Federation. Is that what you're saying?
Right. You would have to define it. You would have to have a term.
So a Vulcan is not an alien to a human because they're a member of the Federation.
Because they're now a member of the Federation. We are essentially one group. Although, obviously, there are subgroups.
We are one big, happy fleet.
I'm just saying you would have to... I'm not saying I know the answers to these questions, but I'm saying you would actually have to build some vocabulary, some social structures around it, because we don't think in those terms. But a lot of the main characters in Star Trek are not from Earth. Does that mean that they're alien to the crew? No, of course not. That's silly. That doesn't make sense. So you would really have to get those terms kind of set. And I don't know that Star Trek's ever really done that, but it would be an interesting kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. So if the android was not made by humans, it could be alien. If it's an Andorian android.
Then it would be alien. I mean, I guess depending on how we defined it, but yeah.
Now, are you defining it because of the makers or the appearance? Because, you know, appearances can be, like, you look at Lol. She was, now what about Lol? Lol was made by an android. So is she also not alien because her grandfather was a human?
See, that's an interesting question. These are great questions, Philip. I don't know. We would have to sit down and figure it out. But I would say, what if somebody built a robot on Earth, you wouldn't call it alien.
What if I actually named it alien?
Then you would call it alien. Yep. Would you call it, you could call it ALF for short, if you really wanted to.
Right.
So.
Well, who is clearly an alien? It's actually in the acronym. It's alien life form. I mean, I can't, how much more can you?
Anyways, that's quite the tangent that we just went on there, but...
I think we brought it all around because we were talking about aliens
on Earth.
First
contact of aliens, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you define aliens? How do you
there
find first contact?
Now defined.
Well, I'm just saying in the history book, like, because I feel like, you know.
You mean the brick with words?
You have your elementary school, like, first contact, and you make, like, your clay Vulcan, you know, whatever. But, like, you're in college, and then you're like, yeah, like first contact wasn't really first contact. You know, like
are you saying
that's what they taught you? But
kind of like, you know, like every year around Columbus Day, we start hearing that sort of thing. You know,
yeah.
Do you know what he actually did, man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, do you feel like first contact has an asterisk? I feel like in the history books.
I would say that they would easily get around all of these issues by saying first official diplomatic contact with some other species.
So bestest contact.
Bestest contact, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's in Montana, so it's in America, so it counts.
I think all these took place in America. That's true. Well, except for Greece, or larger America, possibly. But anyway, so, yeah. Funny how they always seem to find the North American continent.
Well, it's because it's just full of so much freedom. Like, all the aliens just want to come here, you know what I mean?
Oh, yes. Lousy immigrants get off our North American continent. Anyway.
We're kidding, everyone. It's just a joke.
That's right. We can't actually build a wall in space. But anyway, so we just kind of touched on first contact. And I'm sure there's probably stuff we forgot. So if listeners, if there's any other first-year contacts, first-ish contacts we've forgotten, more first-firsters? Yes. First-ers. Oh, you don't want to hang around those people. Do not search that on Twitter. But anyway, let us know. Darren, if people want to talk to you about Bestest Contact, where can they reach you?
They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or to see other projects and Star Trek and science fiction pieces that I'm working on. They can go to my website, which is drsci-fi.com.
And Daniel, if people want to talk to you about whether the Ferengi or the Vulcan made better first contacts, where can they reach you?
They can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, as in the only contact that matters.
That's definitely what one stands for.
Yep.
And they can find me on Twitter as well at NC Public Servant. That's NC for a no contact order that I don't want to talk about. But anyway, Darren, what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we are going to be talking about cloaking technology, be it Federation. I mean, not Federation.
Pegasus.
No, yes. Well,
Genesis?
Not supposed to talk about that, Philip. But no, we'll be talking about all the different types of cloaking technology.
Oh, does that mean we get to talk about When the Bow Breaks? One of my favorite episodes of all time.
If you really, really, I put it in there for you, Daniel.
Well, I'm kidding. But they do cloak a whole planet. So they do. Impressive.
They do. Yeah. But I mean, do they phase that planet? I mean, that's the next step, but we'll get into that next week.
Okay. See, I like it better when you can kind of cloak just this tiny part on your hand.
It's like, I really don't like this tattoo. Just cloak it. I mean, the power drain is incredible, but you know, it's totally worth it.
All right. Well, that sounds very awesome. While we're waiting to break those treaty promises, we'll see you all until next week. I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3. Come!